Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. This week, we're in Perth for the run-up to Saturday's Western Australian state election. It's an election with national implications. The Liberal government is on the ropes and One Nation's disruptive force is being tested at the ballot box. We'll bring you three podcasts from the West. Today we have an overview from Natalie Mast from the University of Western Australia, an analysis of trends and federal implications from the ABC's Anthony Green, and an interview with Premier Colin Barnett. We start with Natalie Mast. Natalie Mast, normally a Western Australian election would not be attracting as much attention as this one is. What is the significance this time of this poll beyond the Nullarbor?
Michelle, we're expecting a change in government, so there's always that issue. We have a long-lived Liberal government. They've been in power for two terms, and so there's likely to be a change of hand. And I think what people are particularly interested in is the preference deal between the Liberals and One Nation, which appears to have been endorsed at the national level. So depending on how the preferences flow, this could change the way One Nation is viewed at a national level.
The Barnett government is obviously, as you say, in a heap of trouble, and on the polls it's headed for a loss. What are the main things that have gone wrong?
Fundamentally, it's the Western Australian economy. This is a boom-bust town, and we've just gone through the most unexpectedly large boom, and the bust is a little more than we had expected, and certainly more than the Premier anticipated. He's taken a head of government lead where he's been the face of this government for the last two terms. He's had at least four people acting as treasurer, and so he is basically viewed as the man behind the WA economy and is now being blamed for the downturn.
Could the government have done more, or is it just one of those things that arises out of other circumstances, the end of the mining boom?
I think the government could have been a little bit more aware of the fact that iron ore prices were artificially high and likely to come off. They were probably surprised at how quickly they came off. But in 2009, Colin Barnett was predicting that WA was going to go through a 20-year boom with growth rates of between 5 and 7% per annum, and that clearly hasn't happened.
To what extent do you think federal factors are playing into this campaign? Malcolm Turnbull hadn't been here for ages. He made one brief visit. There was a report that Liberal officials were pretty unimpressed with that, and now he's not returning in the last week, even though he has been flying over, going to Indonesia for a day or so.
Oh, look, I think that this is actually one of the strongest state-based elections we've had in a long while. Malcolm Turnbull's visit was fleeting, and he disappointed the Liberals by not being firm on a solution to WA's GST problem. So they had expected that he would come out and make some sort of an announcement. It was lacklustre. There was no plan for how WA would increase its GST share. And so the Liberals' allies in Canberra were unable to deliver for them.
And this has been a running sore for a long time, and it doesn't look as though it's going to be solved anytime soon till the formula rectifies things and then a floor is put in. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Could Labor do any better if it was elected on that GST question?
Well, whether or not Labor could do any better, the fact is that they don't have allies in power at the federal level. And so if Colin Barnett, after all of these years, hasn't been able to influence the federal government, I think it's left people questioning just how influential he actually really is over there and how important WA is to the federal government.
If there is a Labor government, will it make a radical difference to this state, or will the changes really be marginal?
Well, it depends by what you mean by radical. Given the dire economic situation in which the WA government finds itself, by 2020 we're expecting a state deficit to be in excess of $40 billion. There isn't a lot of money to play around with, so it's not like we're going to see a heap of brand new investment. The biggest thing that we're likely to see is changes to transport, where the Labor government have their Metronet rail network plans, and they're hoping to take money from the Row 8 highway situation from the federal government and put it into rail instead. But that's a battle that needs to be won. They are looking at the Victorian situation and saying, well, if the government let Victoria redirect funds, then they should be able to let WA do it as well.
Now, privatisation of the electricity network is a big issue. What do people think about that?
It is very unpopular for a couple of reasons. The first is that WA has experienced since about 2009 a significant increase in power bills. It's gone up by about 60%. That's off an artificially low base where the state government was keeping electricity prices low. The other issue is that we are not part of the national grid, nor are we ever likely to be because of our distance. It's a huge state that requires a massive amount of infrastructure, and I think people are worried that a private provider will not support the infrastructure to the levels necessary. So either prices are going to be higher, or we're going to have failures in power supply, or possibly both.
That privatisation would be 51% only, but people are not reassured by that, I guess, because it's a majority.
That's right.
Pauline Hanson's been here this week and has been making waves. What sort of impact do you think she's having and will have, and her candidates, who were in some cases seem somewhat ill-fated, and what are the reactions from the locals to One Nation?
Well, I think Pauline Hanson's arrival in WA has been very interesting, and she is planning on being here till the election and for election night. One of the interesting things is that on Sunday she was on The Insiders and she talked about Vladimir Putin and also the anti-vaxxers campaigns. The West Australian took umbrage, as they rightly should, particularly on the anti-vaccine stance. And I think that there has been a lot of negative press for One Nation and indeed for Colin Barnett, given the preference deal that they have. The interesting thing to see is whether or not there'll be a kickback from One Nation supporters who feel that the press is picking on One Nation, that it's the elitist people again sitting there trying to shut her down where she is considered a voice of the people. Unlike in Queensland, though, Western Australia still has a very strong national party who have done a lot for the electorate, particularly with royalties for regions over the last 8 years. So whether or not the One Nation Party will be able to take votes from the Nationals, or whether it is just disgruntled people no longer willing to support Colin Barnett, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see where One Nation support ends up coming from within the electorates.
Obviously, the Liberals are fairly desperate, and the deal over preferences comes from that desperation. But do you think that it's a dangerous deal for the Liberals?
I think it's a risk. I think it's a calculated risk, and I believe that the Premier seems to have been somewhat surprised at how the negative press he's receiving just hasn't gone away. He's still questioned about this daily, and I believe had a little bit of a tempered display yesterday when the issue was brought up again. From the Liberal point of view, why wouldn't you be throwing everything at the kitchen sink right now? The polling is not good for them. It looks like they're going to lose government, so why wouldn't you try something like this?
Pauline Hanson's come out with some fresh anti-Muslim remarks. What sort of reaction is that likely to bring? Is there anti-Muslim feeling in this state, or will people just recoil from that?
I think there's an element within Western Australian society, as within the rest of Australia and indeed internationally, who seem to be on an anti-Muslim campaign at the moment, and there are people that will find her sentiments appealing.
Would people who are attracted to One Nation, though, be attracted for those sorts of race reasons, or do you think it's a reflection of economic problems and people feeling alienated from the political system and unable to cope with cost of living and all those things?
I think that in some people's minds, those two things are actually interrelated, particularly in Western Australia, where we had so many people here on 457 visas. So the foreigners coming in, taking our jobs scenario. And people are very cautious at the moment in terms of their economic circumstances. Even if people have jobs, they're not feeling particularly secure. A lot of people have had to take pay cuts, or if they've been unemployed and then found a new job, they're at a lower salary now. On top of which, as you know, WA has had significant increases in property prices, and so a lot of people have large mortgages that they have to support, and they're worried about being able to continue that.
Do you think the Trump message resonates in this state?
At some level, yes, and you can certainly see that Hansen has picked up on some of those Trump messages with fake news and that sort of thing, yeah.
And just finally, do you think that we'll have a result on a Saturday night, or it'll end up too close to call that night?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting, and it really depends on how big the swing is and where the swing towards Labor is happening. This election is interesting because it's the first time that Western Australians haven't needed a reason to present to the WA Electoral Commission for voting early. So if you want to vote early, you can. They've had over 50,000 people vote early so far, and 150,000 plus people request voting forms, postal voting forms. So yeah, we could have a significant proportion of the population voting early, which means that we won't know on Saturday night if the polls are close.
Could be a late night for those of us who are back in the east.
Well, exciting night for all of us, I'm sure.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
We caught up with Colin Barnett after his news conference at the Ngalla Early Childhood Service. Colin Barnett, you're well behind in the polls. Why do you think that people have turned against your government? Is it mistakes it's made, the economic transition of the state, or are there other factors?
I believe the biggest factor is the time factor. Having been in government now for 8.5 years, first-time voters were at primary school when I first became Premier, and I think that was probably a factor in John Howard and when he lost government. So that's the biggest obstacle to overcome, and certainly the economy has been turbulent. While, you know, the overall, we've had a 40% growth in our economy over those 8 years, obviously the rise and the dramatic fall in commodity prices displaced a lot of people from the mining industry and mining services. So unemployment is, for West Australia, unusually high, although it is falling and has been falling over the last 3 months. So I think they're the factors.
And you haven't been able to get a better deal out of Canberra that would help your revenue situation?
No, we haven't. And I think it is not only grossly unfair to West Australians that every other state gets more or less all of their GST back, you know, basically 95 to 100 cents in the dollar, and some more than 100 cents. We get, in Western Australia, 30 cents back. Now, the GST was introduced by John Howard as a good economic reform, but also to provide the states with reliable funding, given that most of state expenditure is on education and health, which is driven by population. So as our GST has fallen, our population in Western Australia has gone up by 500,000 people, greater than the population of Tasmania. So we've had to borrow money to maintain and improve services. Reality.
Now, Pauline Hanson is campaigning in the state all this week. She's made some more inflammatory comments about Muslims. Do you have any fear that your preference deal with One Nation could in fact cost you votes rather than help you with votes?
Look, I think some people probably are unhappy with it. I think overall it will improve the Liberal Party vote. And can I stress, there is no agreement with One Nation. I don't endorse their policies, I don't endorse their candidates, and there is no agreement about any role in government, about legislation or policy. It is simply a reality. In the lower house, the Liberal Party will give its preferences to the National Party, as we always have. In the upper house, we give our preferences first to the six Liberal candidates in each seat, and yes, One Nation does come in pretty well all cases ahead of the National Party. And that's a mathematical requirement to try and maximise the Liberal Party vote. No commitment in any way beyond that.
Now, you've indicated that you wouldn't serve out a full term if you're re-elected. Do you think that that might make some voters doubtful about voting for you? Your campaigning is a team, but people like certainty of leadership.
Well, I've said that if the Liberal Party is re-elected, I will continue as Premier, but I would not contest the 2021 election. So, in other words, I would step down before that, and I've also said that whoever follows me, I think, would need at least a year in it. Now, to me, I'm a pretty simple person. That is being straightforward and honest. And I think people realise that, you know, everyone's got to retire or change their role at some stage. So I'm just being very honest, but I intend to be, if elected, the Premier for a good number of years yet.
One of your platforms is to sell 51% of Western Power. That's quite a difficult message to convey successfully at a time when people are worried about energy security and there are a whole lots of fears about what might happen if there's a change of ownership of such an asset. Do you think that you are in a position to get across the difficult messages of the advantages of that?
Well, I think we could easily misunderstand the sentiment and underestimate the knowledge and understanding of people. Western Power is the poles and wires business. It does not sell electricity. It simply transports it. And the state government will retain 49%, basically half ownership. It is a regulated natural monopoly. It is regulated now and it will continue to be regulated. So, and the evidence around Australia is that full or part privatisation of poles and wires business actually brings their costs down. Synergy, the organisation, government body that sells electricity and generates electricity, will remain 100% in government ownership. And Western Power only accounts for about 40% of people's electricity bills. So I think people realise that the days of government controlling and owning everything have changed. I mean, you know, in living memory, West Australian governments used to own and build hotels. Well, you know, who would contemplate that now today? So I think part private sector ownership makes sense. It allows the state government to immediately repay $8 billion worth of debt, and it will avoid us having to put large amounts of taxpayers' money into future expansions of Western Power. There will now be some private funding, and that private funding, somewhat ironically, is going to be Australian superannuation funds. And the unions, who are running a massive campaign against the part sale of Western Power, they are the ones running the very same superannuation funds that will be lining up to buy a share of it.
I noticed in your press conference you were saying that this state has a balance and will have in the future a balance of energy sources, renewables and fossil. But you also made the statement there's no such thing as clean coal, which I thought was interesting in the context of the current debate about coal. Do you think that the pursuit of cleaner coal is not a route to go down?
Well, I think it's coal has relatively high levels of emissions. Higher quality coal tends to have lower emissions per unit of energy produced. In Western Australia, we have had good long-term policies on natural gas. And for a power station of equivalent size, gas-powered generation produces less than half of the emissions of coal. So if you want to clean up the energy system in Australia, it seems to me that the bleeding obvious thing to do is to make more use of natural gas in Australia. In Western Australia, over half of total power generation, both government and private, mainly mining, is by natural gas. So we actually have the cleanest energy system in Australia.
So if you survive as Premier, that's something you'll be arguing with your fellow premiers, you'll be promoting.
Well, Western Australia is not interconnected. We are an isolated grid.
But you have a voice in the national debate.
Yeah, and I just watch it with bewilderment, to be honest. For Australia, with its huge natural resources of coal, natural gas, of uranium, and so on, has got itself into an absolute mess over energy policy, and going way back to the 1970s and 80s in Western Australia, political leaders of the time were wise enough to preserve part of the natural gas for the home market, for the domestic market. If that policy had been followed rather than criticised on the East Coast, we would not have the problems we've got today.
Now, just finally, if you do hang on against the odds, it'll presumably be by the grace of the Nationals. Relations have been pretty fractured. How are you going to go about kissing and making up?
Well, politicians are pretty good at that. You have to be. And look, election campaigns get stressed. The issue between the Liberal Party and the National Party is in country electorates, and I think country voters understand that the Libs and the Nats will fight it out at election time and then, as you say, kiss and make up and provide good government. And I know we've had lots of issues to deal with, but I am very proud of the government I've led. We have been a good government through extraordinarily difficult times. The global financial crisis hit Western Australia and so on. And the rise and fall of commodity prices. And many of the commentators around this country, who basked and dined out on the so-called resources boom and then wrote it off and I never wrote it off because it's Australia's biggest industry, and it's coming back, and they're all trying to get on board again. And if you look at it, you know, Western Australia, we only, you know, 10% of the country's population. We produce well over 40% of Australia's exports, and I'd suggest by 2020, Western Australia will be producing over 50% of Australia's exports as some of these big natural gas projects here. And with that, our economy is changing and evolving, but we are the most closely linked to Asia, and we are an incredibly successful economy. And we, you know, I'm getting a little bit tired of, not from you, Michelle, but I'm getting tired of many commentators sort of criticising Western Australia, implying it's some sort of basket place. And I can say to, you know, listeners on the East Coast, come over and have a look. This is a strong, vibrant economy, and it leads Australia internationally. And the things that we produce in this country, in this state in particular, can't be produced from elsewhere. You know, they are real goods that have a real demand and a growing demand internationally.
Colin Barnett, thank you very much for talking with the conversation today.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
We'll finish today's podcast with Anthony Green, the ABC election analyst who's just arrived in Perth to cover the last week and election night. Anthony, what are the polls now telling us about this election, about its likely outcome?
Well, the most recent poll, the Galaxy poll, indicated that the swing is up towards 11%. Which is that margin, that size of a swing, which is going to can deliver Labor a majority at the election. What's not, we're not clear of, because nobody's published this, is the breakup between the city and the country. Based on the past, you would expect that if that's the statewide swing, then that swing will be bigger in Perth, which is where the marginal seats are. With the rise of One Nation and with Labor's traditionally weak vote outside of Perth, you'd expect that the swing in the non-metropolitan areas will be not that big and drag down the statewide swing. I suspect there will be a substantially larger swing in the metropolitan areas, and that's where the seats that Labor needs to win are.
What do you think will happen to the Nationals' vote, especially that of Brendan Grylls, who's fighting, I think, a campaign against the Liberals, right, in his Pilbara seat?
Well, he's up against Liberals. I mean, the Liberals haven't won Pilbara in decades. It's a Labor seat, traditionally, and Brendan Grylls won it off Labor at the last election. What was interesting at the last election is Brendan Grylls abandoned his seat in the Central Wheat Belt, the southern agricultural districts where the National Party has its base. And in 2013, he went and ran in Pilbara, and the National Party won three of the four northern seats and got two members in the upper house. It's the first time the National Party had ever pushed into the north of the state. And that's why they've got so much power in the current parliament, because of that advance. At this election, they're under real threat. Labor has probably revived in the mining and pastoral regions. You've seen the re-emergence of One Nation. And the question is, will the National Party get squeezed out in that?
So could Grylls lose, do you think?
Look, I mean, Pilbara is very remote to Perth. I wouldn't like to say what's going to happen up in Pilbara, but he's had a lot of money thrown against him by the mining lobby because of his attempt to increase the rental fees for miners. So I think that he's under huge pressure, and an enormous effort has been put into trying to defeat him.
There's been, of course, a lot of controversy about this deal between the Liberals and One Nation. What do you think is the likely impact of that in both the lower and the upper house?
Well, in the lower house, I'm not convinced it will have a major impact. Unless this election is going to be decided by those seats on swings of between 7% and 12%, the seats that will determine whether Labor gets a majority or not. There's only one of the seven seats in that band which still has a One Nation candidate. There was a second when the One Nation candidate stood aside. So there's not going to be One Nation paraphernalia being handed out directing preferences. People are going to be faced with a stark choice between Labor and Liberal. There isn't a One Nation there in the middle. So I'm not sure that that deal is going to deliver for that reason. And secondly, is if all these people, it depends where these people come from. If there are, and we'll watch for this on the night, if the two-party preferred swing is the same whether One Nation candidates are there or not, then One Nation preference deals haven't mattered, because all it's done is that people have gone from Liberal to One Nation and back. And there may have been some people who voted Liberal last time gone directly across to Labor. The real impact of the preferences deal is in the upper house, is that a party that the Premier yesterday described as being not a serious party, a party that last week he said he didn't know their policies, and he's chosen to put that party, One Nation, ahead of the National Party, who he's governed the state with for the last 8 years. That's an extraordinary thing for the Liberal Party to do, to cut out their governing partner and give preferences to One Nation.
Do you think Liberal voters will react against that?
I think we'll have to wait and what we've seen in the four elections previously, while One Nation emerged from 0%, is that the rise in the One Nation vote was almost exactly matched by the decline in the Liberal and National vote. Some of that may have involved a bit of switching. Some Labour votes went to One Nation and some Liberal votes went to Labour. But essentially, it has always hurt the Liberal Party and the National Party. It hasn't delivered votes from the Labour side in any way which counteracts the number of Liberal voters who leave. I think this election is going to be decided by a two-party swing, and it's occurring in Perth, and it's between who you want to govern, Labour or Liberal. I think One Nation is just there. The coalition, the Liberal Party, is just making sure it can sort of minimise the size of the swing and that it doesn't have One Nation actively campaigning against it.
The upper house is obviously important, though, to a future government. What do you think that the likely result is there? Will One Nation get the balance of power, get just a slice of the balance of power?
The two things people have to understand about, before talking about the party consequences, the two things to understand about the Western Australian upper house. The first is it's heavily malapportioned. There's a lower quota for election in the bush compared to the city. A voter in mining and pastoral district basically has about six times the weight of a vote in Perth. 10% of the people in the state in the two remote districts elect 33% of the legislative council. So it's heavily biased against Perth, and that's where One Nation polls well. So even if they only get 8 or 9%, they will get 14 or 15 in these remote regions, and they will potentially elect three members. The second thing people should understand is it's still using the old unreformed Senate system. There are group voting tickets, and all sorts of preference deals have been done, and the preference tickets will be determining who wins some of the seats. Ben Drury has been over here and consulting with the Fluoride Free Party and the who else is running, the Australian Christians, the Liberal Democrats,
but not One Nation.
Micro Business Party. No, he hasn't been doing deals with One Nation, but there's a vast array of about seven or eight parties that have all swapped preferences. There's an array of independents who are actually Flux Party candidates who are involved in all this as well. So there's going to be a lot of confusion, and that preference harvesting tactic that elected people like Ricky Muir, that's at play again in this election. And so there will be others apart from One Nation elected to some of those seats. It's more likely that One Nation will elect three, I think, seats, potentially four, but I think three is more likely, two if they don't do very well. And they'll be sharing the crossbenches with the Greens and with a collection of micro parties. It's a bit hard to name exactly who could get elected.
So neither major party will, in fact, have a majority in the upper house. It will be a balance of power situation, and the government, the new government, whether Liberal or Labor, will have to negotiate with crossbenchers, just like Canberra.
Yes, and Labor will probably be hoping that some of these micro parties do get elected. It will give them some more people to negotiate with other than One Nation. But it's a very... We'll just have to wait and see on the Legislative Council. It's very hard to pick. I mean, who knew that Ricky Muir or Wayne Dropulich weren't going to get elected to the federal election in 2013? Certainly, reform of that group voting ticket system must be one of the agenda items for the government, whoever forms government after the election, because they can't continue to run with that system.
And the national implications of this election in WA, which is being watched very carefully by the federal parties?
Well, there's a big argument going on the conservative side of politics about where they should be pitching their message. Should they be pitching it to the middle ground and trying to sort of get the One Nation people back as preferences, or they should be pitching towards One Nation and putting at risk some of the central ground going and joining Labour? I think we'll be watching to see what happens to the Liberal Party first preference vote this election. Where does it go? Does it go to One Nation? Does it go to Labour? And what happens to the preference flows? People get a bit obsessed about two-party preferred sometime. The question at this election is, what happens to the Liberal Party? Because there is somebody in politics, One Nation at the moment, competing with them on the right side of politics. So what's going to happen to the Liberal vote?
We'll know in a few days, or perhaps a bit longer than a few days for that upper house. Is that right?
We should know probably in about two to three weeks for the Legislative Council. We should have a good picture of the... I think we'll have a good picture of the lower house result on Saturday night. And if not, it'll all be sorted out in the week after the election.
Anthony Green, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all for our first podcast from Western Australia. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. I'm Michelle Grattan. Goodbye for now.